Almost Anything Podcast.
Chewing gum online, eh? I hope you brought enough for everybody.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
Aren't you?
And now it's time for Anything On with Mike and Ananda.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Anything On with Mike and Ananda. We're going to be doing movie reviews, and I'm going to start out kind of giving a little intro of myself, and then Ananda's going to tell you what she's all about as far as movie reviews go. And then we're going to have a couple movies that we're going to talk about. First, I really enjoy comedies. That's my favorite go-to genre of movies. I also like suspense, dramas, and thrillers, kind of the backup, but comedy is my go-to. The one I really don't enjoy as much or have the least favorite movies from is horror and musicals. Those are the two genres I don't tend – I have a couple in there that I enjoy, but for the most part, not my genre. My favorite movie of all time is Braveheart, and even though – Mel Gibson, who is definitely not the coolest of individuals that we've learned in recent years. But back then, I'm sure he still wasn't the coolest of individual behind the scenes. But he made a damn good movie. I like it because it has comedy, drama, suspense. It's got pretty much everything rolled into one long movie. But it's well made. My favorite TV show, it's really tough to choose one. Two of my favorites were Lost and Sopranos. Both were really in-depth shows that I got really dove into. I followed Lost from the beginning. Sopranos, I dove in probably season 3 is when I really got into it, and then I started following it the rest of the time. So if you know my TV choices, I'm used to disappointment because both of those ended in a very weak way that I did not necessarily enjoy.
But so, the ride was good.
It was adventure. Those were all about the journeys. Those are definitely like, take the ride. That's what it's worth. Don't worry about where your destination is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm lying. That's where you kind of have a little idea of what my movie tastes are and TV tastes are. Ananda, you want to take over and tell us a little bit about your tastes?
Yes, I would love to. So, yeah, hi. I am a 30-something woman who shockingly loves romantic comedies.
What?
And probably, yeah, least favorite being horror or gore of any kind. Although I think that was more from earlier years. I was such a sissy as a kid in terms of, you know, watching The Fly or Aliens and just being completely terrified by those monster kind of.
Well, we were what, like 10 at that time?
Younger, yeah.
Maybe even younger.
10 or so, younger, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely traumatizing.
Yes. So I stayed completely away from Freddy Krueger. He was way too intense for me.
I wish I did.
So I will say, however, I do like The Walking Dead. I can appreciate it now as an adult, although I wouldn't let my 10-year-old watch that necessarily.
I can see that.
I guess the younger they are, the more desensitized they are. So maybe 10 is considered mature at this point. But for me, I think that's still too intense.
It's hard
to tell.
You
have to go based on your own kid, I suppose.
I have a nephew who's 10, and I think he's too young for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that would be way too violent. But anyway, I digress. So I do appreciate, you know, the lighthearted boy meets girl conflict, boy gets girl or girl gets boy in some way storyline. And my favorite movies of all time are a tie between Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and The Princess Bride. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the original.
Yes.
I will say, not the Tim Burton
version.
With
Gene Wilder.
Yes.
Yes.
Who is one of my all-time favorite actors. So those are my two top favorite movies. And then as of right now, my favorite TV show is Game of Thrones, although I have to say this last season, season 5, was a bit rough to get through at certain times. And
I thought it started weak. I mean, obviously, it's a show that needs to build, but I thought it – for that show, it just didn't grab you right. For that season, didn't grab you.
Right. But we can go on a whole other episode about that show. So yeah, so those are my faves as of this moment. And I'm excited for the show.
Excellent. So we're going to have a couple of shows every week that we're going to discuss about either TV shows or movies. Pretty much anything entertainment. this week we have a TV show and a movie. We have Outlander, which we just finished watching the first season, both parts of the first season.
Yes, exactly.
And we also have the movie Chappie. Just as a precursor, if you guys have not seen either of these shows or the movie, we may have some spoilers. We'll try to keep those to a minimum.
Or alert you.
Or alert you when we do, but please be aware that they may slip. And so if you want to watch them first, you should do that now. But going on, we have, like I said, Outlander and Chappie. We're going to begin with Outlander and our review of that. We'll start with Ananda.
Hooray! So Outlander is a show that is on Stars on a cable network. It came out in two parts, so it is season one, but there is part one and part two. It was broken up into separate sections. And it is based on a series of books written by Diana Gabaldon. The first book was published in 1991. So this has been a long time coming. There's been a lot of fans for many, many years who have kind of become obsessed with this book and wanted to see it in a movie or TV format. And so it's been very, very exciting.
So it came out with a built-in audience.
Totally. Especially the women.
So it's a romance novel of sorts.
It is, yes.
Or more than that.
It is written by a woman, and the main character is a woman, so it definitely has that key heroine figure. And then she is, initially in the beginning, she is married in the 1940s to a man named Frank Randall, and they've been separated by war. They were both fighting for the British Army in different capacities, so she was a nurse and he was a spy.
Nice.
And they were separated for years, and they have come together now that the war is over, and they are having a second honeymoon in Scotland in 1945, and they visit a circle of stones, which you can think of maybe Stonehenge being a similar type of feel. So she ends up touching one of the stones and gets transported back in time. So there is a time travel element, and then the
guys.
Most of the content of the show takes place with her being in 1743 Scotland. So she is suddenly completely out of her element in terms of being an English woman in a time where the English are fighting or occupying Scotland, but there is some dissent or there is some turmoil in terms of Scotland rebelling or feeling tension and wanting King James to overthrow the current English king and bring Scotland back into primary power.
So the time she's jumping into is kind of the beginning of all that that happens in history?
Right. Well, there was actually several uprisings, but the one that happened in 1745 or 46, I believe, was a really big one. So she's come just before that when there's a lot of tension between the English and Scottish natives, especially the Highlanders, where there's a hierarchy of lords who do pay taxes and do pay reverence to the English throne, but also have some of their own sovereignty or some leadership that they rule. And there's a lot of tradition within the Scottish culture that is very foreign to her. Plus, being a woman, she's supposed to be subservient to men. So there's this whole dynamic where she's already kind of a feminist, or she's been on the battle lines as part of the British Army performing as a nurse, and she's got a tough upper lip, so to speak, and now she's thrown into this archaic way of being where women are supposed to be seen and not heard, and you know, she has to kind of battle between her nature, which is to fight and survive for herself but speak up for herself, versus the community or the mores of the society around her, which could possibly view her as a witch or as a threat, as a spy, or as somebody who is of danger to them. So I just want to give credit to the actors who play the main characters. The main person or the point of view of the story is Claire Randall, who is played by Catriona Balfe. And I do apologize if I mispronounce any of these beautiful names.
We've looked that up. It was difficult to figure out how to pronounce that.
But she is excellent. And then her husband, Frank, who also plays a secondary role of Jack Randall, who is an ancestor of her husband, is played by Tobias Menzies, who I I guess is very well known as an excellent actor from Game of Thrones.
I recognized him right away from Rome, which is an HBO series where he played Brutus, which is Julius Caesar's nephew. And he was a prominent role in that show. Very, very good. Just rewatching Game of Thrones recently, I've decided I want to watch it from the beginning and torture myself through that story again. And I'm to a point in the third season where he actually comes up as a Tully. So he's been in some major series on HBO. He's a great actor, so he definitely has the resume to back it up.
Yeah, and he plays key roles in this story. And then the third main character is Jamie Fraser, who is also known as the King of Men, who is the Scottish Highlander that ends up rescuing Claire, and they are forced to marry due to unfortunate circumstances, but they end up falling in love. And so she has kind of this dual storyline where she's in the future with her husband Frank, and she very much wants to get back to that future, but then she also is trapped in the past and has to go through life in that regard and has to survive by marrying this Highlander who can protect her and help her through the struggles of that kind of a life. And I want to give major props and credit to Ronald Moore, who created the series, as well as his wife, Terry Dreschbach, who was the costumer for most of the episodes and who kind of nudged him to start this series in general, because the research, the effort, and the meticulous details that they have put into recreating the world of 1700s Scotland is just gorgeous to watch.
But yeah. I love that in these series where they cast the lead as this gorgeous Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of stud, and then all of his tribesmen look like the common guy. So, like, all of them have, like, the big noses or like, they've been through some fights or they've
had some rough years.
Yeah. But Jamie is, like, this pristine, like, he's like this Gaston kind of character. He's, like, just larger than life. I just always love how they cast that. It's like, of course, I'm going to drool over him. You put him around a bunch of dwarfs, you're like, yeah, man, Snow White's gorgeous.
Well, and an interesting fact is that he was one of the first main characters to be cast, and they thought originally that it would be so hard to cast him, because in the books, he's larger than life, he's got red hair, and he is very muscular, he has been raised on a farm, so he has a lot of physical attributes to him, and he's something like 6'4", and then, of course, it was the opposite, where he was easily cast. He was one of the first main characters cast, and it took a very long time for them to find Claire.
Well, so, she's going to be a main character, so you have to find someone who can really carry a show.
Right. And there definitely needs to be a connection or charisma between her, Claire, and Jamie, as well as her first husband, Frank.
They need to have some charisma.
Right.
They need to have a spark.
Right, exactly. So I know that was a lot of lead up, but it is a series as opposed to a movie. So it has, you know, multiple episodes and obviously multiple seasons.
Yeah.
And it'll be an ongoing show. But as far as the show itself, I really appreciated it as a fan of the books, who had read, obviously, previously and had been familiar.
That's a great place to start. How true to the story is it sticking?
Very much so. I feel like the characters and the storyline are very much in line with the books themselves. And in this case, I feel like the adaptation to the screen was much more true to the books themselves, because the creator, Ronald Moore, and his wife, Terry, who is a costumer, kind of came up with this concept ahead of time. It was based on her favorite book series, and so she really had a passion or a desire to keep the material as close to the original as possible, which I enjoyed.
Having not read the books, I enjoyed the series very much so. What are some of the things you didn't like about it? Some of the best points about it?
Gosh. I appreciated that they used Scottish Gaelic. They pronounce it Gaelic on the show and the DVD extras, so that's okay. How I'm saying it, but it might not be. Yeah, I know Americans usually say Gaelic, but it is a traditional language in that region of Scotland in the Highlands. The only thing I was personally disappointed in was that they didn't give subtitles. They didn't explain what was being said in Gaelic at the time. But I also understand that that was a technique or tool used by the creators to show that Claire was not understanding or was not in step with the culture and what was being said. So she was having a lot of passages translated during, you know, the ceremonies or whatever was taking place.
I definitely got frustrated with that lack of subtitles as well, not knowing, you know, what the heck they were talking about, because they sometimes had some seemed meaningful in conversations where you have no idea what they're talking about.
Yes. So I think it's a demonstration of how the Scottish identity is so individual. It's so separate from the English identity.
Sure.
And even though English rule at the time had dominated or made Scotland its subjects, there really was still a definitive boundary or a sense of identity that was separate from the English. And so Scottish Gaelic was a way for them to really keep that identity strong as possible. The other thing, though, that I know you were uncomfortable with is it did stick to the books in terms of the gay rape.
I gave you just the nick of time, spoiler alert there.
Gay rape,
oh, man.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'll tell you what, we watched that together, and I really had to watch that through my fingers because it was a torturous scene. There was nothing fun about it. There was nothing enjoyable about it. I'm sure you'd like seeing their bodies, but we've talked about that before.
It wasn't sexy.
Seeing naked bodies being tortured is not a fun experience.
Yeah. And I hear that there was a lot of up in arms about this in general, like within the watching community. They did not appreciate the graphic gay rape scenes, that was a big no-no. It's a disturbing subject matter either way, but the fact that it was in the books and they did stick to that storyline and they did end up showing some pretty intimate or graphic images regarding that subject was shocking, yet also, in my opinion, important because it does follow with the intensity of Jamie's trauma and just how much or how far he's willing to go to protect Claire, which makes him even more the king of men.
Absolutely.
Either way, I feel like the series itself did service to the book, and I look forward to season two.
Excellent. So you're definitely in approval. You suggest everybody go out there and check it out if they haven't yet. And
Just as a sideline, would you be interested in wearing a kilt? Because those are sexy. I don't know why more men don't wear those things.
I would totally be down
to wear a kilt.
Especially
in summer weather. Come on, no.
That's what I'm saying. Like today when my balls were so sweaty, I would use the AC.
I don't know if wool would be the best fabric for Southern California weather, but...
Yeah, maybe not, but...
Kilts are hot.
I'd be down. There is a Scottish festival that I'd like to go to just to see...
Yes.
Maybe I can get one for a decent price. And try it on for you.
There you go.
But
I'm down.
From an avid fan of the books to now seeing the whole series, you definitely suggest everyone go out there and check it out?
Absolutely.
From someone who didn't know the books at all and watched it purely off your suggestion, I was pleasantly surprised at how quickly it did pull you in, the storyline. The first episode I thought was a little...
exposition.
It's a lot of exposition, and it is much more felt to be more of a romance story. Romance novel style. But there is
a lot of action.
There is a lot of action. That's what I'm saying. Once the series progresses, the storyline is actually very captivating. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of good fight choreography. There's beautiful cinematography going on.
The landscape. Yeah,
this is a travel agent's dream because I'm sure everybody that sees it is like,
tourism's
I need to go
going
here.
Up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do they even have travel agents anymore?
Absolutely. Of course they
like,
do.
Who books through travel agents anymore?
Apparently it's very popular.
But anyway, like I said, coming from not being a reader, I really enjoyed this series and suggest you guys give it a chance. If you would like to watch it, it's on the Starz Network right now.
Or on DVD.
Yes, on DVD.
I purchased my copy at Target.
There you go. It's a brilliant series. Definitely check it out. We're going to go ahead and move on to our second topic today, which is the movie Chappie. Here's the synopsis for Chappie. In the near future, crime is patrolled by a mechanized police force. When one police droid named Chappie is stolen and given new programming, he becomes the first robot with the ability to think and feel for himself. This movie was directed by Neil Blomkamp, who's known for District 9 and Elysium. It was starring Charlton Copley, who was also in District 9. He plays Chappie,
and
the main
Elysium.
Character. He was also in Elysium. It also has Dev Patel.
Yeah.
Dev Patel, who played Dion, who was the maker, who was one of the creators of Chappie himself. It was a really good movie. It had all this whole movie takes place in South Africa. The director, the writer, the main actor are all South African. And they have a big fan base in South Africa, including some major rap stars in that area who are Ninja and Yolandi. They actually are South African rap stars who are, if you get a chance... We might play you a little tune right here. This is a little example of Ninja and Yolandi.
Reach, bitch. Reach, bitch. Oh, my reach, bitch. A motherfucking reach, bitch. Doesn't always a reach, bitch.
So, yeah, they cast them as themselves in this movie.
What is there to say? I mean, I...
Are you a rich bitch, too?
No, actually, I'm not. Unfortunately, I don't have a golden toilet that I like to sit on and sing from. Let's see. I appreciated the movie and the characters that they played, which were gangster-style, like, renegades, let's say.
If I did not look up who they were, I would have thought it was just an interesting casting choice. I would never have guessed that they were some rock stars. So they did a pretty good job as far as just being a generic thug for that setting that they have.
Right. They did. And I would imagine that that's their first major film or, you know, acting debut.
I'll have to look that up, but I don't know. And I know that they're huge fans, so that's how they got to be a part of the project. So much that I believe Ninja himself has a tattoo of District 9 inside his lip. That's what I read. That could be that's internet info, so take it with a grain of salt, but it was definitely some hardcore fandom right there.
Yeah, tattooing takes it to a whole new level.
Plus tattooing anything.
Inside your lip.
In your mouth? Yay. Yeah. But this movie also stars Hugh Jackman as Vincent, who is the main antagonist of the movie. And
what did you think of his haircut?
Oh, his mini mullet that he had going on?
Yeah.
I thought it was ridiculous, and it looked really fake.
It definitely heightened his image as a douche.
It really did, and the character, the way he portrayed himself as the villain, as kind of this cocky, I believe in the movie he's Australian. And so he has that very Aussie douche feel, and I think that's what kind of the hair comes with.
I love Australians.
No, I love Australians too, but I'm talking about that. No, but there's that guy that takes it too far.
Right. Well, the whole plot line is this military company who's created robots, and some of them are basically programmed to be police, and then he has created this super droid, let's say, but it's run off of human consciousness, so it responds to what the human operator is thinking.
He being Hugh Jackman.
Right. Hugh Jackman, the main evil person, right, has created this other droid, which is in competition, and he wants to basically highlight the assets, right, of his own invention.
I felt a lot of this movie had a RoboCop vibe to it.
Oh, really?
Not necessarily in the context of the storyline, but just the special effects or the body types of Chappie as well as the Mamoose.
The Moose.
I like Mamoose better. I think I did that at your house, too.
So you appreciate it.
There was such a comparison from the Moose to that character in RoboCop, mm-hmm, that I just thought there was definitely a
parallel.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in general, did you appreciate the movie or did you not
like it? I found Chappie to be quite enjoyable. The character who plays Chappie brought him to life in such a way that makes him very believable, very emotionally connectable. You can definitely feel that he is a being who's learning. You can feel the innocence in him.
Very childlike.
Very childlike and very innocent and very wanting to please mom and dad. And it had a very childlike nature to him. Mm-hmm. And I thought he brought that to the screen very well. And I also enjoyed the antagonist. I really enjoyed this movie as a whole. I actually watched it a couple times to test myself, because I'm always the first time I'll give any movie like a quick rating. And then the second time is when you find out, is it really good or did I just really want to like it? And the second watching, I enjoyed it even more. So I have to say, it held up. I thought Hugh Jackman, minus his mullet, was a good antagonist. I was impressed with Sholto Copley's voicing abilities. I liked him in District 9.
And the A-Team.
Oh, that's right. He was in the A-Team. He plays the crazy one in the A-Team. I forget that character.
The helicopter pilot.
Yes, good. But I would definitely suggest checking this movie out for a good action movie with a little heart, and you'll come out feeling a little better at the end. Although I feel the ending left a little something to be desired. I feel there was an open ending that you can either continue on with the story or they can end it real fast. Spoiler alert, the Maker and Chappie, who are both about to die, one from being physical human body, one from running out of a battery, they both transfer their individual consciousness into other droids.
Which Chappie figures out how to do.
Yes. So at the end, they're basically blend in as new droids.
As new police droids,
As new police droids, they're gone, and they just kind of sneak in through the crowd and just walk into the sunset. But we're thinking about, they're all on, all these droids are on a program and would easily have an end switch. So at any time, wouldn't they just
the company could take them out? Yeah. And then the very last is that his mommy, who played by Yolandi, her consciousness is transferred into a droid that looks more feminine than the police bots. He designs a body, essentially, for her that is robotic, but her personality is downloaded into it, and the very last shot is her opening her eyes.
Yes, and that was very interesting because they did make it look so much like her. So they made an android that looks very much like the person whose body the consciousness come from, which could lead quite an open door to a new storyline.
Which brings us to the theory of a human being being able to download their brain, their consciousness, their memory into a computer itself.
Would you want that? I mean, if it's totally you, you transfer it over there and you're like, you couldn't tell the difference until you look down and you're like, oh my God, that's not my body.
But the same principle applies if somebody has an on-off switch. If you're still a machine that could be potentially turned off forever, then you'd still die. Your consciousness would never be reborn.
Well, here's a question, though. Would you rather be turned off or have to go through the pain of normal life, the wear and tear, and just reaching your end, your natural end? Okay, ultimately, I really found this to be a fun action flick. Definitely a popcorn movie.
But there were emotional parts to it that I also appreciated, that I felt at points I was tied into Chappie's journey and learning about the harsh realities of survival or of life as an outsider or as somebody who's considered to be a threat or something like that. And I appreciated it on an intellectual level as well as on an action fun level.
Oh yeah, I mean the deep thinking that you can actually go with on this, speaking of consciousness, is definitely there, and the possibility of that being a future technology that could come to be in existence is kind of frightening and also exciting.
But we've automated so much of our lives already.
Automated, yes, but given something consciousness that you can, that grows on its own, learns on its own,
adapts
on its own,
yeah, makes its own choices,
has emotions,
yeah,
you know, and actually has
a sense of a stake in things or not.
Yeah,
I did appreciate Chappie. I did think it had a multi-layered storyline that was familiar but yet unique in certain ways, in terms of discussing morality or discussing, you know, nature versus nurture issues, and also where we are headed as a society. You know, do we choose to automate our lives and to bring technology further into our daily lives as a way of safety or as a way of, you know, holding back fear, maybe? Or
I think,
you know,
it's also
where are we headed?
With every story you see, like Bicentennial Man or Robots with Will Smith, all these movies are about smart robots, they all give them these like three rules to live by. Basically, they can't harm humans, they can't intentionally kill anybody, and I can't remember what the third one is, but it was always these built-in pre-programmed,
the three laws.
Laws, yes. Mm-hmm. So if that's built in, great. But I, you know, you can definitely go down a rabbit hole with these thought processes. But as a movie in whole, would you suggest people go out there and check it out?
Yeah.
Would you rent it again from the Redbox? Would you pay a buck for the movie?
Probably. I can see myself doing that. But you know,
great.
It seems to me that there's this pushing of or emergence of wanting machines to be as human-like as possible, and also for humans to want to have bodies that work like machines. So even Blade Runner featured a kind of type of reality where there's a machine that looks very humanoid but then has an expiration date, right? And they're trying to fight against death. There's so many different movies that kind of hit upon the thought of human consciousness merging with mechanical perfection and creating this new organism, let's say, bioengineered organism. And we're even talking about, as humans, the technology to have nanobots, which would change our cellular structure and allow for the eradication of cancer cells or Alzheimer's or to rebuild bone or, you know, to have different functions for these tiny, tiny, tiny microscopic machines that can merge with our biology and heal. So
I don't know. That is stuff that will blow your mind if you go down the rabbit hole long enough, because the technology that is out there and is coming is amazing. Sometimes frightening, but always sexual. Not to wrap you up, but what ultimately would you suggest to our listeners to, so you say,
and
yes to,
especially
this
with the red box deal, $1.50 a day,
it's worth it.
Definitely.
Okay, so you say definitely rent it. That's awesome. I would say it's definitely worth watching. It's a fun action movie. You liked it on multiple layers. We say worth watching. If you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns about our show, please hit us up at the Almost Anything Podcast Network. I believe that is the Almost Anything Podcast at yahoo.com. You can email us. Get in contact with us through that network. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. I'm Mike. And
I'm Ananda.
And we will be here next week. Thank you, guys.
Have a great night.
You are listening to an Almost Anything podcast.